Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, we'll take a break from the breathless media scandal talk to try to explain some of the underlying context of why the IRS was scrutinizing Tea Party groups in the last few years. We'll also hear an assessment of the Robert Supreme Court. And John Gray, best known for Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, with his new co-author Barbara Annis on improving gender equality and communication at work. So we should have a really interesting show. But first, this is day two of our spring membership drive, and I hope everyone didn't do it yesterday or yet this year. We'll take a couple of minutes to support the station. I want to thank Anna Sale for filling in for me on day one. You know, normally I wouldn't miss a pledge drive day. I have a responsibility to be here during the pledge drives, of course. But the oldest person in my family died on Monday and was buried yesterday. My dear 98-year-old uncle, Sam Lehrer, who was actually a guest on this show a few years ago, some of you may even remember, reminiscing about his political experiences in the 1930s. So maybe we'll replay some of that later in the week. But Uncle Sam, rest in peace. And I certainly needed to attend his funeral even more than I needed to be here to support the pledge drive. So thanks for understanding, everybody. And thanks again to Anna Sale for filling in. But today I need to make up for some lost time. So if you're a regular listener, I hope you'll call up right now or log on with your pledge, 1-888-376-WNYC, 1-888-376-9692, or pledge online at WNYC.org. And thanks. Also, check out our special deal today, too, on the Eton Crank radio and flashlight, solar-powered radio and flashlight, nicely designed little thing, and of course great for an emergency, as a thank you gift, 1-888-376-WNYC, 1-888-376-9692, or pledge online at WNYC.org. Hopefully some of you listening right now will get us going for the day. Thanks again, everybody, for supporting the station. Now, we'll begin today by slowing down the breathless media scandal talk to try to explain for a few minutes some of the underlying context of why the IRS was scrutinizing Tea Party groups in the last few years, something that is becoming a scandal in Washington, obviously, for the way that it was done. My guest is NPR White House correspondent Scott Horsley. Hi, Scott. Thanks a lot for doing this on WNYC All By Our Lonesome is one NPR station. Thanks for coming on.
Happy to be with you and happy to take a break from the breathless media scandal talk.
And to understand this story, I think we have to understand the difference between a 501c3 and 501c4 tax-exempt organization. A 501c3, correct me if I'm wrong, is any charity or religious or cultural organization, anything from the Red Cross to the Catholic Church to a public radio station or a symphony orchestra. A 501c4, which the Tea Party groups were trying to form as, a 501c4 is a civic association that can be partly political, like a union or the NRA or the Sierra Club, yes?
That's right, and they're named for the section of the IRS code that they're organized under. And a key distinction is that 503c4 groups, known as social welfare organizations, are not required to disclose their donors in the same way that a 501c3 group would. So the trade-off for that, you're allowed to take anonymous contributions, but you're limited in the kind of politicking that you can do.
And as these Tea Party groups are getting special scrutiny or were getting special scrutiny, they were applying for that 501c4 status. But the law requires that those groups' primary function and primary spending must be for the social welfare of their members or their communities, not primarily to influence elections or to spend most of their budgets on elections. So what kinds of expenditures would 501c4s be expected primarily to make?
Well, of course, it would depend on what their agenda was, but that's right. The concern here was that you don't want anonymous donors being able to make contributions to these quote-unquote social welfare organizations, and then turn around and funnel that money into partisan political activity. So that was what the IRS was on the lookout for, was that if we're giving you this tax-exempt status and the right to solicit anonymous contributions, we want to make sure that you're not overly involved in partisan political activity.
And 501c4s were much in the news this last election cycle, as of course you know, for taking advantage of this status and maybe some new wrinkles of it under the Citizens United campaign finance case ruling to make big donations to super PACs, specifically to influence elections. And so questions were raised in lots of media reports about whether some, with their anonymous donations, were using these in ways that made them fake social welfare organizations and really campaign finance organizations. I mean, this was a real question over the last election cycle, right?
That's right. And so that's the backdrop here. And it's entirely legitimate to give some scrutiny to these groups and see that they're not overly engaged in political activity. The reason that this has become a scandal is that it appears, at least, the frontline workers who were carrying out that scrutiny were not doing so in a content-neutral way. That is, in trying to figure out which applicants for this particular tax-exempt status they would get extra scrutiny to, they had to set up some filters. And the filter that they initially set up was to look for groups with, for example, Tea Party or Patriot or some other political-sounding name. And when the Inspector General looked at this and issued their report yesterday, they found that that was, you know, obviously there's an appearance there that it's not a politically impartial standard. But it also wasn't a terribly effective standard because there were groups that had Tea Party in the name that really weren't particularly engaged in political activity and didn't really warrant extra scrutiny. And on the flip side, there were groups that were heavily engaged, or at least potentially heavily engaged in political activity, that didn't have one of those suspect names and so escaped the net of this special scrutiny. So that's where the problem began.
So maybe they didn't do it well. But some opinion writers are out there today saying the IRS was doing its due diligence under the circumstances, not singling out groups for political reasons. So maybe they did it sloppily, but it wasn't necessarily a political vendetta. I'm not sure that we know that yet. But many Tea Party political organizations were forming at that time, asking for tax-exempt status as 501c4s, just as the Supreme Court in Citizens United was allowing 501c4s, as long as they were primarily for social welfare, to make some campaign finance expenditures anonymously, which was a big attraction. So wouldn't it have been common sense due diligence for the IRS to give extra scrutiny to this new wave of applications, most of which did seem to be leaning to the conservative side, by groups that might be expected to be close to the line on their tax status legitimacy?
Well, it's important to say that the group in Cincinnati that was conducting this review didn't only look at Tea Party groups or Patriot groups or other political-sounding names. In fact, those groups constituted about a third of the applicants that got this extra scrutiny, and the other two-thirds were flagged for some other reason. But it was at least problematic in terms of the impression it left, that if simply having a Tea Party label landed you in the bin where you came in for extra scrutiny, and what we learned is that extra scrutiny wound up in many cases taking a very long time, in some cases more than 3 years, there was at least an appearance that this was not being done in a politically neutral way. And so what the Inspector General found is that when higher-ups at the IRS learned that this was the standard being used, they immediately said, you can't do that. You can't just screen out Tea Party groups. You have to look at what is the activity that the groups engaged in, and it not in terms of the partisanship of it or whether it's a conservative or a liberal organization, but is it politicking? And what the Inspector General found was that even after that change was ordered by higher-ups at IRS in Washington in the summer of 2011, the frontline and auditors in Cincinnati reverted to using a a problematic standard, and the Inspector General concluded that there wasn't enough management oversight, and so this inappropriate criteria continued to be used for much too long, over a year and a half. And again, the result for the applicants was, in many cases, they were left in limbo. Ultimately, none was denied tax-exempt status, but they were left in limbo in some cases for more than 3 years.
NPR White House correspondent Scott Horsley with us. You mentioned the difference between the 501c3s, the charities and cultural institutions, and the c4s, these more political groups like the NRA or the Sierra Club or unions or some Tea Party groups, is that the donors to these c4s can remain anonymous. Why is that?
Well, and I should say, donors to the 503s can also remain anonymous, but they're prohibited from engaging in political activity altogether. So with the C4s, you can have some limited political activity and still keep your donors anonymous. And then there are other types of tax-exempt organizations, for example, 527s, that are more explicitly political in nature, and those are required to have more disclosure of their donors.
Well, what are they protecting? When the law says you can be an anonymous donor to a union or to the NRA or to the Sierra Club, what's the purpose for that anonymity protection under the law?
Well, we've certainly seen examples where people who contributed to one cause or another that was perhaps controversial then faced retribution, either from, if in the case of a business, from their customers, or one way or another. So there is a longstanding tradition in the United States of being able to take part in organizing activity without having to disclose it.
Right, though it's not supposed to be for campaign finance purposes.
Or partisan politicking. That's right. You can do general advocacy. You can make your issue arguments. You can hand out copies of the Constitution. But you're not allowed to have as your primary activity championing a particular partisan candidate.
Right. So this has become a way for people to anonymously funnel large contributions, in some cases, to election-related spending and using the 501c4 law in a way as a loophole. But one of the charges that the Tea Party groups are making now, and I think the Inspector General of the IRS may even have acknowledged, you tell me, is that the IRS was asking for names of these groups' donors. Why would they want to know to determine tax-exempt status, the names of the donors who are supposed to be allowed to be anonymous?
Yeah, it's a real catch-22 there, and it is something that the IRS was asking for, and which was considered an inappropriate question. To the extent that those answers were submitted, the IRS decided that information would be destroyed. But just asking the question, of course, had a potentially chilling effect, and it's an odd question to be asking if the whole purpose of the organization is that they can accept anonymous contributions. The idea here was to try to make sure people were not, as you say, using this as a loophole and having some overtly political person contributing. Other questions that were asked, for example, were the political registration of the officers of the organization and whether any of them had run or planned to run for public office. All of those were deemed unnecessary, inappropriate questions. But those were the kinds of things that the IRS was using as they tried to ferret out, is this a group that is really a political group masquerading as a social welfare organization?
All right. So details of this will continue to emerge, obviously.
Oh,
but
yes.
I wanted to...
the full feeding frenzy is now underway, and we have the first congressional hearing on Friday, and I'm sure it's the first of many to come.
And yet the purpose of this segment, and Scott Horsley, thank you for doing this for us, was to take a pause from that feeding frenzy for a few minutes and understand the underlying conditions and what was changing in the political group and tax-related implications of those groups over the last few years that might have even led to the beginnings of this. So thank you for doing that for us, and I really appreciate it. And keep up the good reporting.
Good to be with you.
NPR Scott Horsley. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us.